This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson. I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. So send us an email, give us a call, talk sports with us. I know you can always listen to us on the internet, anywhere around the world, listen to us right here on AM 870 WKAR. Very glad to be with you today. We're going to talk a ton of sports with you today, as we try to do each and every day. And we're going to talk with Seth Mitchell. First off, and as many of you know that were watching Saturday night, Seth had a very impressive fight against Chaz Witherspoon, and he knocked him out in the third round. We'll talk about Seth and what are his plans for the future. And we'll talk with Seth Mitchell. So let's bring in Seth right now and talk with him about a little bit of boxing today. Seth, how you doing, my friend?
Oh, I'm doing great, man. Doing great. Packing, getting ready to go see Floyd and Cotto fight.
Okay, well, that's going to be a good one. You're seeing two fighters, and especially Floyd, who's probably one of the best defensive fighters of the day. You saw one of the other best defensive fighters on your undercard, Bernard Hopkins. You've seen two extremely good defensive fighters. Did you pick up any tips, or at least from that one, from the first one, about anything you could do on your defense to even shore up your defensive skills?
You know, absolutely, man. It's, you know, watching them, they're two of the, like you said, two of the best defensive fighters, you know, in the game right now, and you know, to ever lace up the glove. So, you know, I'm looking forward to it. Right now I'm just resting, you know, still ecstatic over my, you know, gut-wrenching, you know, fight. You know, the way I fought through adversity, man, I was just so proud of myself, because I would tell you that's how I would react. But until you get, you know, thrown in the fight, and until you get put in that situation, you know, there's still, you know, a question. So I was very impressed with how it came back, but I wasn't surprised at all, because I know the type of person I am. But to fight through it like I did, man, it was just very very lifted and emotional for me.
Well, yes, you know, because, like, as you know, fans, and we all have to wonder, well, how much can you take a punch, because we hadn't seen you take a punch before, and like you say, that was the first time you really was hit. So how were you stunned very much, or was it pretty much, because we could see you trying to hold on. Tell us about that whole sequence in that first round.
You know, it was some uncharted waters. You know, I've never been, you know, dazed like that. My legs weren't there, but you know, cognitively, I was still there. I saw him. At no point in time did I see triple or double, okay, you know, of Chaz Witherspoon. So, you know, I knew that I saw in his eyes that he knew he had hurt me, and he was coming in for the kill. And I was just thinking, okay, when he gets close to me, grab him, tie up, buy time, and survive the first round, and then come out there and, you know, try to get back on track. Cause, you know, I was just staying on the outside of his reach, and he was controlling the first round with his jab, and then he eventually, you know, caught me with his right hand a couple of times. But I was, instead of bending at my knees, I was bending at my waist, and I was like a sitting duck for his right hand. And I was just thankful that I was able to, you know, fight through the first round. But once the bell rung and I went back to the corner, you know, my head was clear, and I was just, you know, ready to go out there and try to, you know, dictate and take away his jab and get on the inside. Once, you know, I got on the inside, he didn't have an answer for it, so I just kept going. But a lot of people say, well, Chaz, you know, he stopped boxing. You know, he didn't, I tell people, he didn't stop boxing. I made him stop boxing. In the first round, he dictated with movement and with his jab, and I made the adjustments, and I got on the inside, and he wasn't able to make the adjustments.
Yes, and that was clear. Yes, yes, he did. He couldn't make the adjustments, and like you say, you made him fight a different fight. Now, initially, he was going over the top. But like you say, when you told me that you just had to bend at your knees. So to bend your knees, you're bending your knees. So he was able to get you land a lot more punches over the top. So, no, have you made an adjustment on that, or have you and your trainer looked at the film and figured out how you're going to adjust to that? So someone won't come over the top and get you with a good punch.
I mean, it's basic boxing. You know, you're never supposed to bend. It happens. You know what I mean? Like a lot of times it happens, but you're not supposed to, you know, bend at the waist. And when I was bent at the waist, sometimes you are bent at the waist, but you still have to keep your head on the swivel. And I wasn't doing either of those. I was bent at the waist and my head was in the same position. And we work on it, you know, day in and day out, never keeping your head in the same spot for more than 2 seconds. And, you know, it's boxing. You're going to get hit. You're going to get dazed. You're going to get knocked down. You can't stop those things from happening, but it's how you react. And, you know, I reacted like a champ, you know what I'm saying? To watch the fight, man, it's crazy, because even when I go back and I watch the fight, it's an exciting fight to watch. But if you didn't know any, you could see the will and the hunger and the determination, you know what I'm saying, that I wasn't going to lose that fight. And it was very a touching fight for me. I was just proud of myself.
Yes, well, you should be.
I know you was biting your nails, brother.
Yeah, I was into it. I was into it with both feet.
Yes, sir.
No, because it was like you say, it was such a good fight, and you need that kind of touch. Now, did it take you long? You said your head was clear at the end of that first round. Did it take you long to clear your head, or how did that turn around that you're able to clear yourself and be ready for the next round?
I mean, it's just a testament to, you know, my conditioning and my training. I said before the fight, you know, I'm not worried about going to this. I trust my God-given attributes, and I trust my training. I trained extremely hard. And if you watch my breathing and you watch, I wasn't huffing and puffing in the first round, even though I was under so much duress. You know, I was dazed. My breathing, my condition, when I sat down after the first round, you know, my breathing was still good. I trained. This is what I do. This is how I provide for my family, and I've told people numerous times, I don't think that I'm invincible, but I won't underestimate myself. And I won't cheat myself. And when I say I won't cheat myself, that's by I would never underestimate an opponent, and I would never step into the ring not in shape.
Oh, that is very good, because so many boxers that I've seen over the years, so many of them don't get in as good a shape as they could, and if you do that, you'll be in great shape, and you'll be fine if you do, like you say, don't underestimate anybody and keep coming in tip top shape. A lot of fighters, I was at a fight card this past weekend, and I knew two of the fighters. I had seen them fight before. I knew they were going to get beat because they're never in top shape. So even before I even saw it, I knew they were going down, and they both got knocked out. But that was part of their own problem was they're never in good shape.
Right. To come back from what I came back in the first round, the punishment that I took in the first round, and still came back, and I threw 81 punches in the second round. That's a testament in itself right there. In the third round, I wasn't breathing hard. And in the third round, I threw 80-some punches.
The key to me was you started going to the body, especially very hard in that second round.
Yes, yes. Oh, man, it was beautiful. It was a beautiful thing to watch, man. When I watched the fight today, even today, man, I'm just, it's not the, when you listen to the commentators and you listen to a Hall of Fame Emmanuel Stewart say, you know, I don't know if Seth's going to be able to come back from that first round. And then you listen to the trainer of the year, Virgil Hunter, to say Seth has never been there before. He does this. He got a long way to come back. And it didn't take me two or three rounds to get warmed up. I was busting them from the second round on. You know, see, they don't know. I tell people, you know, you have some fighters that are, you know, talented, and some fighters that work hard, but, you know, it's something else, man. It's, you know, they don't know me. They don't know what's in me. It's something that's in it. You can't teach what I did. You know, plenty of fighters would have folded under that pressure.
Oh, so true. You've got, as we say, you've got some of that junkyard dog in you.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. But I'm just thankful, man. Like, after the fight, I wasn't, you know, my tears weren't tears because I just won the NABO championship. It was because I know where I'm trying to go, and I know, you know, everything flashed in front of me after the fight, you know, who I'm fighting for, my children, my family, my wife. And it just got so emotional because God allowed me to overcome that adversity, and that was big. I've never been there before in my life.
And that's a very valuable lesson to learn in boxing, because so many boxers never get that chance, or they don't know how to handle it. Like you say, you handled it. You did the best thing you did at that situation, because you were able to handle some adversity. And it's always good to go through adversity, because now that you've been there, you know how to handle it even better the next time around.
Exactly. Exactly. Not saying that I want to experience
right.
it again,
but. Oh, shoot. Now what's the plans for the future? I know you mentioned on the telecast you might have a fight come up either in the fall or in the summer, one of the two.
Yes. We're not sure right now. I'll learn no more within the next 2 weeks, but it'll probably be sometime in July or August. August or September, probably.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'll fight two or three more times this year, but definitely two times.
Okay. Yeah, because I think they mentioned, or either I read the one was somewhere, they mentioned about Michael Grant could be your next opponent. Michael Grant is a very big heavyweight, and he had fought for the title a few years back. But that's somebody who he was taller than you. If they do put you in the ring with Michael Grant, he's a pretty tall fighter.
Yes, he is. So he's a name that's floating out there, but nothing is solidified yet. You know, I'm gonna go back. I can't wait to get back in the gym and work on the things that I need to work on. And it's just gonna. I want to thank Chance for making me a better fighter.
Oh yes, that was such a good fight. And you're right. Yeah, when you fight an opponent that tests you, that takes you to the limit and tests you and make you work even harder, that's very good. And since Chaz did that, he definitely tested you. I mean, he you know, like you say, he looked like he was going after you in that first round. I know he thought he had you. I know he did, but you were able to come back, fight him off, and hold him off, and did everything that you should. Which was very good, but when you see a fighter now you'll know how to attack someone. If you see them, you'll be able to sometimes fight even a harder fight coming back even quicker. Or say if you're hurt, you'll be able to respond with fighting back the same way, wouldn't you? And the next time, if someone say hurt you the first time, you'll be able to respond right away. You think?
Just go back to the same, like with this fight. You know, when he hurt me, I'm not too macho. What he did was he didn't grab, he fought.
Yeah.
You know, when you get hurt, you know, you need to be smart and grab and live to fight another round.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my whole motto. Let's get out of this first round. And once I got out of the first round, you know, I was like, okay, you know, that's over with. This is round one. All of let's start from scratch and let me dictate. And that's what I did. So I mean, I knew going into the fight, Chaz was a hell of a fighter, hell of a boxer. But you know, his MO is when he gets hit or he gets hurt, he stands there and trade with you. So that's we kind of prepare for that.
Okay.
You know, and that I told people that might be his demise. You know what I mean? When he you know when he sits there and fight, because I told people he wasn't built like that. He stay on your jab and stay moving, but then I inflicted my will on him. You know, I'm not gonna let you stay on the outside and box my head off all day.
Yes, that was a good way to do it and approach it. You fought an excellent fight against him. Now, what did you think about in the next fight? Did you get a chance to watch Dawson and Hopkins? And what did you think about that fight?
I mean, I thought it went pretty much how I expected it to go. You know, a lot of people were saying that Chaz was gonna stop B Hop, and my whole thing was, I was like, nah, I don't think he'll stop. B Hop is a veteran. He knows all the tricks and trades, and you know, and he could always pull a rabbit out of the hat. So I was never confident on. I leaned a little bit more towards Chad Dawson in the fight, but I always said you can't count B Hop out. He can pull a rabbit out of the hat.
Yeah, when you've been fighting as many years as he had and has fought so many championship fights, you definitely can't count a guy like that out. And you know, he has so much experience. And yeah, did you learn anything from watching that fight, or did you throw something you put in the back of your head from watching B-Hop and Dawson?
I mean, just B-Hop's movement. You know, B-Hop, he moves very well, and I'm just trying to pick up some of his defensive pointers. I mean, you can never go wrong watching B Hop, man. He's slick. He knows. He doesn't waste a lot of energy. He just fights smart.
Yeah, because he is. He's tough. I mean, when you watch him, you're watching one of the best defensive fighters. He knows how to tie up. And that's the thing. When you watch him, he'll tie you up so the other guy who's trying to be aggressive, he just can't get his punches off.
Exactly. He's a very smart fighter.
He's so smart, and you're getting smarter yourself. I mean, you're in a tough, we know as we talked before, you're in a tough game and a tough situation. But hey, you've got good people around you, you're definitely moving up in the boxing world. And hey, you might be able to, like you said, next year you could be fighting one of those Klitschkos for their title. You're certainly moving up as far as the American heavyweights. You're probably the top rated now, the most knowledgeable and most renowned American heavyweight out there.
Yeah, that's what they say, but you know, I let them say it. I just continue to, you know, try to get better, man, and try to work hard. But that's what they say.
Yeah, well, hope you keep, as you say, you got to keep winning. You keep winning, and you'll move up. So if you keep winning, good things are going to happen to you, for you.
Yes, sir.
Okay, hey, Seth, it's always a pleasure talking with you. We'll have to call you up and talk to you again probably sometime before the next fight. But it's good, and congratulations once again for your win over Chaz Witherspoon and, you know, getting that third round knockout. Definitely was inspirational and definitely a very strong fight.
Thank you very much. And hopefully, I try not to have you biting your nails so much in those rounds, man, because I know it was a lot of people, man, tell me that it was scary for them. So, you know, that's a part of the game and part of the boxing business. And, you know, I just, thanks for the support, man. I really appreciate it.
Hey, glad to. And, yeah, I was sitting on the edge of my couch. And, yeah, hopefully I won't have to sit on the edge of the couch the next time.
I got you, man. I got you.
Okay, Seth. Hey, good talking to you, my friend, and I'll talk to you a little bit later on, buddy.
All right, same here, brother.
Okay, bye-bye. And that's Seth Mitchell, and talking boxing with Seth, who just won a fight, 25-0-1 now, and 14 KOs, and he's doing very well. He could be getting a shot at the Klitschkos maybe next year, one of the Klitschkos, and moving up next year and fighting more and talented boxers. The time now, 22 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870. WKAR.
The parade of potential Romney running mates continues. Bin Laden's death becomes political, and President Obama says no, he's not spiking the football.
I hardly think that you've seen any excessive celebration.
I'm Jennifer Ludden, the political junkie, plus 10 things you'll never hear in a commencement speech. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Rain and thunderstorms are likely this afternoon with a high of 75. A good chance for showers and thunderstorms tonight, mid-60s for the low. A breezy day and partly sunny for Thursday. There is a chance of showers and thunderstorms and a bit warmer, a high in the lower 80s. Then mostly cloudy Friday with a lingering chance for rain, highs in the upper 70s.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll-free, 877-927-870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. I want to thank Jack Ebling for setting in for me yesterday. I want to thank Jack. As always, Jack does a great job setting in for me and filling in and provided you with some very good information from many of our guests and people that we know out here in the Mid-Michigan area. I want to say congratulations to Stacy Sablodnik-Stoll, who's the Women's Coach of the Year in the Big Ten Golf Coach of the Year. So congratulations to Stacy Sablodnik-Stoll. And she's just done a great job coaching women's golf here at Michigan State. And we've got more sports to talk with you right here on AM 870 WKAR. If you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. Now, Detroit is playing Kansas City this afternoon, and we'll try to give you a little update from time to time and see what the score is in that game. It's a getaway game for today, so we'll find out. And Justin Verlander is pitching today, so hey, Jason, that's going to be Jacob, that's going to be a very good good bout with going up against Verlander. I mean, he's 2-1, and he struggled somewhat, but it's probably, just the first inning, probably just the first inning score right now, isn't it?
Top of the second, Kansas City's up 1-0.
Wow. 1-0. Well, I had a friend who made a little bet for that game that Verlander might pitch a no-hitter, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen.
No, that's already gone.
Oh, shoot. Well, also, let's talk a little bit. It looks like Scott Skiles says he's going to be back as the head coach of the Milwaukee Bucks next year. He's the next year or the last year on his contract. So we'll see how hopefully that works out for him. He's got to win a little bit more. He took him to the playoffs back in 2009, 2010. Hasn't been back to the playoffs in the last couple of years. So he's going to have to get him back in the playoffs. As you know, in the NBA, it's all about getting in the playoffs. You definitely have to get there, even if you don't win a whole lot, but you got to get there sometimes. And so he's going to have to get back in the playoffs, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
And give us a call. Well, there's a little bit of article in today's Lansing State Journal on the fullbacks that the Spartans have two good solid fullbacks here. They'll be blocking and paving the roads because they're just tough. Also, coming up, we'll be talking with Jim Abbott. Jim Abbott, the former University of Michigan pitcher, former pro player. He pitched for the Yankees and also, of course, for the Angels. And he was one of the few players. There haven't been very many players who were able to walk out without playing a game in the minors. And he walked out and played, pitched right away in the major leagues. And quite an accomplishment for the young man from Flint. And, we'll talk with him a little bit later, talk about his rise in pitching and pitching in Major League Baseball. He certainly had a lot to overcome, and he did a great job in challenging and pitching in Major League Baseball. Hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. If you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. Well, the draft, of course, as everyone knows, is officially over. We're still looking at, I haven't seen where Keith Nichols signed with anyone yet, and maybe he'll sign soon, but I know he was looking over all of his scenes, and if you can find him anything, Jacob, if you find anything on there where Keith might have signed, that would be appreciative if you can find him out there. But I know he was looking for a spot to land, and I was surprised that no one has signed him as of yet, because he's a guy who has enough skill where, he's played quarterback, he's played receiver. You talk about a guy who's got both skills, and he might be able to get on a team somewhere and just bring up some of those skills he has, and he could be either. He could be a backup receiver, or he could potentially be a backup quarterback. But that's the thing. Can he get those kind of skills? Can he do that to help himself out and become a much better receiver, a much better quarterback, or a much better receiver? I mean, those are two skills to have, two good skills to have, and he played them both in college, and did very well. So we'll just have to look and see if anything comes around for Keith Nichols when he gets a chance to move on. Boy, when you look at all the guys that signed, I think now teams have more money available to them, because I think every team signed about 10 to 15 players just as free agents, or it's like being a walk-on. You're going to the pros, and you've been in college for 4 years. I saw one player who was a all Big Ten player, and he wasn't drafted at all, so he was a free agent, and he got picked up. And it's funny, you can be an all Big Ten player, and that's still doesn't do, it's not enough for you to get watched or get drafted or looked at by the scouts and by the people in the NFL. So, you know, to get that far, you know, you really have to be good. Some just think of all the players who were Division III and Division II All-Americans that didn't even get a sniff, didn't even, you know, no one even paid them attention. So, and that happens. So I know a lot of players will think, hey, I'm all Big Ten, I'm all SEC, I'm all this, and some of them won't even get a look and see. They'll just still have to sign with somebody else, and hopefully somebody gives them a chance to show that they were wrong, that they'll have to prove themselves. A lot of the players, when they don't get signed, and a lot of players that don't get drafted, in the you know, a lot of players that are drafted in the second, third, fourth round and such, they'll come into training camp with a chip on their shoulder, because they will say, hey, I know I was better than this guy or that guy, and I know I should have been a draft pick, and nobody saw that I should be that. And so, therefore, they're going to come in on the training camp with a chip on their shoulder, looking ready to go to war. And that's the way they look at it. Hey, they'll feel very – so many of those guys that weren't drafted or drafted in the low round feel very disrespected, because as a player – you have to think highly of yourself. I mean, if nobody else may, but you will. And if you think you should have been highly drafted, you know, you're going to carry that chip on your shoulder as you move ahead. So that's part of it. So you want to look at all of the competition out there, and you're trying to beat and best all of that competition. You just have to prove that you're one of the best out there. That's for sure. Well, we also saw that Brandon Inge got picked up by the Oakland A's, and he's probably, I think, 1-for-8 right now. So he's still not hitting, but he at least he's playing. He's the, you know, the A's have got them a third baseman. They needed somebody who could play third, and so he's still in the big leagues. So he's and the Tigers only have to pay a portion of that $5.5 million salary. I think they'll have to pay about $400,000, something like that. That's all they'll have to pay of that salary. So that works out for everybody. Especially works out for Brandon, and he gets another shot to play Major League Baseball. Hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 1:05 to 2 o'clock right here on AM 870. The time is 32 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock, and we want you to stay with us, come with us each and every day right here on WKAR East Lansing. We come your way Monday through Friday from 1:05 to 2 o'clock, and if you've never, ever called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up. Talk sports. Well, last night, there was some interesting basketball games on in the NBA playoffs. And, Chicago went down to Philadelphia. Philadelphia really put the screws on them in the second half. They really played some good lockdown defense. So, and with Derrick Rose out, everybody is saying, oh, the Bulls will be struggling now without Derrick Rose. Well, they played very well without Derrick Rose. And we'll see how well they struggle. We'll see if they can come back now. Now the score is, the playoff score is 1-1. And it looks like the Lakers are in a very strong position. They're up 2-0 over the Denver Nuggets. They're 2-0, and all they got to do is make it through this series without Metta World Peace. And if they can get through that, then they can welcome him back. Probably in the second round, he'll go to. But you know, Metta's had some problems over the years. Let's face it, he's had some problems, and I'm sort of looking forward to one game taking place tonight, and that's the Memphis Grizzlies and the Clippers. The Clippers made an amazing comeback in the first game. They were trailing by 27-21 in the fourth quarter, and they came back and won the game. And so the Memphis Grizzlies, I know Zach Randolph and his fellow mates are very ticked off that they lost that game, and they allowed the Clippers to come back and get the win. So that should be a very good game tonight, that one. It should be very interesting. And then, of course, we've got the hockey playoffs going on now as well. And so a lot of good things happening in the sports world. And, you know, we can see how the Wings, they've got the certain players in the system already, and they'll look at them and how will they do? Will they add and build on their players and get some free agents out there, some big-name free agents? Or will they just go in the minor leagues and get some of their minor league players? Now, HBO is going to be showing the Wings and the Toronto Maple Leafs, and they're for that HBO 24/7. 24/7, they do all the boxing previews with that. But they're going to do that with the road to the Winter Classic. So that's be between the Wings and the Maple Leafs. And you see everything behind the scenes that goes on behind the scenes in the road to the Classic. And it should be an outstanding series when you get a chance to watch that in the fall. Well, if you probably read already, since Delmon Young has been suspended, he won't be back until Friday. And Delmon has, his brothers apologized to him, Dimitri Young, who played 12 or 13 years in the pros. And he says Dimitri says he didn't do right by Delmon. He didn't give him the right kind of instruction as he was coming up. And he says he apologized to him for that. He thought he could have given some better instruction to help him find his way and do better as he got to the major leagues. So he'll say that. And Dimitri played 12 or 13 years, but he had alcohol problems and he had some other problems, and it cut short his career. But he did get 12 years in, or 13 years in, which was pretty good. Hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. If you've never called us before, you can become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. Well, there's a new player out there in the major league who's he's attracting a lot of attention. Bryce Harper from the Washington Nationals, and he's a hitter that they really very excited about Harper. So we'll just have to watch him these next few days. He's gotten called up. How will he do, and how will he fare in his quest to become a regular, everyday major league player? And that's the thing. And then we have the Andy Pettitte, Roger Clemens. Clemens' hearing is being discussed, and Pettitte is his friend who talked with him and said they talked about HGH, and he says that Clemens used HGH, and Clemens knows he talked, but Clemens is denying still that he ever used HGH. So we'll see how that turns out. It's the retrial of Pettitte who's saying that he never used it at all. And Pettitte did say they talked about it, and they I think they said it was around the year 2000 when he used it, and that was very important to him in that. So we'll see more of that. And then, of course, I know so many of you, so many of us shook our head last night when you heard about Amari Stoudemire throwing his hand and through a glass. He said he thought that the thing that he hit, it was plastic. He didn't realize it was glass. And so, that fire extinguisher he hit, he thought it was just a plastic thing over it, and he hit it in his hand, and boy, his wrist is really in trouble. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see what happens. Will he recover from it, or will he somehow be better for it? But that was it. So, well, we're going to try to get hold of our friend Jim Abbott. Right now, you're listening to radio station WKAR in East Lansing. And stay tuned for more sports talk right after this right break right here from us at WKAR East Lansing.
Stuart Chaffetz sent his autistic son to school wearing a wire. What he heard infuriated him. A teacher and aide bullied and mocked the boy. The school says it's an anomaly. Others aren't so sure. Budget cuts, they say, are leaving many special ed programs underfunded. I'm Jennifer Ludden, doing special education right. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Rain and thunderstorms are likely for the rest of the afternoon today, a high near 75. Then a good chance for showers and thunderstorms tonight with lows in the mid-60s. A partly sunny and breezy day on Thursday, a chance for showers and thunderstorms, a little warmer, highs in the lower 80s. And then mostly cloudy Friday, again a chance for rain, highs in the upper 70s.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll free, 877-9527-870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. And now we hope to get contact with Jim Abbott, the former major leaguer, played with the Angels and played with the New York Yankees, came up, went to University of Michigan, had a very good college career and Olympic career. Jim Abbott was a fine major league player, and he's still in working with the Angels. And so he does that now. He lives out in California, but he's originally from Flint, Michigan. And let's bring in Jim Abbott and talk a little baseball and talk about Jim's life with his. He's written a book called Imperfect. Jim, how you doing?
I'm good, Earl. How you doing?
Hey, doing good. It's a pleasure talking with you. I gotta tell you, I'm from your hometown of Flint as well, and I knew I went there a few more years before you went there before you graduated and things from high school. But I can tell you, even when we all heard that you were making your run through college baseball and through the Olympics, and then you got to the majors, everyone was so proud of you, and we all were at that time. I remember that very, very well.
Well, thank you. I've said it over and over again. I've never, I've always been appreciative of the people of Flint and how supportive they've been and how many times they believed in me when I didn't always believe in myself. And it's great to talk to you. I really appreciate that.
Yes, you played football back then, and you played baseball as well. How was it juggling those two sports in high school? I know you were already baseball, but they tried to get you to come out for football too, didn't they?
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. My head coach, Joe Ufinger, called me up one day and said, "Hey, we hear you have a pretty good left arm. We need a backup quarterback. Get down here. You're playing football this year." And I'd never played football before, and I wasn't quite sure what I was doing or even how to put the shoulder pads on. But they brought me in the game. They helped me to find a way to get the snap from the center. And I played a couple of years. Baseball was always my sport, but I sure love those Friday nights and playing high school football.
Yeah, that's something of playing high school. I went to Southwestern, so I remember we had some games against Central as well. But boy, for you when you played at your time, that had to be exciting. And that's the thing about Flint. The people in Flint, all they wanted to do was see you succeed and win, and that's the thing about people in Flint. They're always concerned just about winning and doing well. The team that they're following just does well.
It's a great sports town, Earl. You know that. I mean, people love sports. That high school varsity jacket meant something in Flint. I remember going to movies
did.
At night, looking at the Flint Southwestern varsity jacket and looking at the Flint Northern varsity jacket, and you knew who those guys were and those girls were. You recognized the names and you recognized the sports they played. So for a kid who grew up differently and, missing my right hand, that gave me a chance to fit in and to be a part of something.
Oh yes, without a doubt. Now the question I really had, how did it feel for you? Cause so few players, as you know, don't get a chance to go straight to the majors. You're one of the few that went straight to the majors, not going in the minors at all. How did it feel for you that very first time walking out on a major league mound and you had no minor league experience?
No. And that was one of the first times in my life that the game kind of washed over me a little bit. I was caught up in the moment, swept away by it, so to speak, and I don't remember much about that game just because I was playing against guys I'd only seen on TV and pitching against Mark Langston for the Seattle Mariners, who is now a good friend of mine. So I don't remember much of that game. I know that I threw a first pitch strike, and from there it got ugly. But quite a thrill to go straight from the Olympics and amateur baseball to professional baseball.
Oh, yes, without a doubt. I mean, yeah, the Olympics had to be exciting. And what was that like, being an Olympian and being so few people get to experience being a part of an Olympic team? How was that when you look back and you look at the Olympic experience and your major league experience? Does that hold more esteem, or was the major league experience eventually?
Well, I can't separate them. I mean, mm-hmm. the Olympic experience was unbelievable. To play with mm-hmm. the guys that I played with, I mean, that was amateur baseball. It was college baseball players from around the country. We had guys like Robin Ventura from Oklahoma State and Tino Martinez from the University of Tampa. And, you know, to play with that kind of competition when nobody cared about their stats, I mean, it was just about winning and playing for the United States. And tremendously exciting. We all pointed towards that Olympic game and the gold medal and to win it, to be on the mound when it happened. You know, I can't tell you how exciting that was. So I had some great moments in Major League Baseball, but I think the Olympic team was the best team I ever played for in terms of camaraderie and spirit and really, you know, fighting for each other.
Yes, and now, what was it like when you pitched that no-hitter? You said you hadn't really watched a no-hitter until recently. How was it watching that, and what did you experience, and what did you learn from when you went back and watched that no-hitter for the first time since all those years when you pitched it?
You know, it was fun. I didn't know what to expect. I don't know why I didn't want to watch it. I guess I felt like maybe I got a little lucky that day. I walked a few guys. I hit a couple balls hard. And, you know, it certainly didn't seem like a perfect game. But, you know, I went back and I watched it with the guy, Tim Brown, my co-author on the book, mm-hmm. Imperfect. And it was fun. I felt like it was a great game and against a great lineup for the Cleveland Indians. And in some ways, it kind of became a metaphor for the way, this book helped me to look at things in a little bit more positive way. Like, hey, you know, this was a great game. Focus on the positive. Focus on, you know, what happened. It was great and a cherished moment.
Yes, and did the book help you to focus more on the positive? I think you said that it was a little bit of negative, but you seem that writing the book has really seemed to help you.
It has. It was a great, you know, I hate that cliche, journey mm-hmm. or exploration or something like that.
Yeah.
But, it really was. I mean, I was born missing my right hand, and I get mm-hmm. that. And I never wanted to make a big deal of it. To me, I wanted to be measured by what was given to me. And I felt like I had a good left arm. I felt like I could throw. And the question was, to me, did I live up to that ability? Did I live up to what was given to me? And writing this book helped me to come to terms with, hey, I gave it everything I had. I did everything I possibly could. And I'm very proud of my days spent on a baseball field now.
And yes, and your parents, they gave you every avenue. I mean, they didn't try to hold you back in any way, did they? When you were growing up as a kid, they just basically taught you that you could do whatever you want to do. You could be who you wanted to be. I think when I read that, you know, that's always seemed to be their mantra. Hey, they weren't going to limit you in any way.
No, they didn't shield me from experience, and mm-hmm. sports didn't matter to them a one iota. You know, they wanted me to get involved. They wanted me to experience the playground and all that brought, and to play games, have fun, take the lessons from it, and move on. And I think it took everybody kind of by surprise that I did okay, and I kept moving on and having success, and the lessons became a little bit different. But my parents were my heroes in that. You know, they didn't keep me away from, they didn't shield me away from failure. They didn't shield me away from the teasing on the playground. They encouraged me to get involved. They encouraged me to be with the other kids. And I really believe all that made all the difference in my life.
That's good because from everything I've seen, you have phenomenal parents, and they really did a great job of instructing you and letting you find your way. Basically, it helped that they let you find your way in the sports world. As so many of the kids, as you know, we grew up in Flint. We all wanted to be some major leaguer or some kind of pitcher, even though some of us didn't make it that far, but we certainly had those dreams.
Yeah, we did, didn't we? It's hard to imagine coming from Flint, those Kirtley Park, and playing baseball on those dusty fields. And
yes.
Someday you'd find yourself in Yankee Stadium.
Yes, and the thing when you look back to where you came from, playing on those dingy fields, and now it's so sad because, you know, The kids just don't play baseball like they used to. Like when you grew up and when I grew up, kids were filled. Kids wanted to play baseball. Now we see all they want to do is play football and basketball these days.
I am lacrosse.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, but that's okay. You know, the game is experiencing incredible popularity at the major league level, and you know, I think there's always going to be kids who want to play. There's a lot of great opportunities out there. There's a lot of great sports. But baseball is a great game. I love it because it gives kids of any ability a chance to play. I mean, you could have any ability and be able to contribute to a baseball team. You know, whether it's your speed, your enthusiasm, your power, your pitching ability, everybody's got something to contribute.
Yes. Tell us about the book. Tell us some of the things that you wrote in the book and that some of us that we should really look out for if you get a chance to read the book. Because from the parts of that I read and thing, it seems like it's a very good – I can't wait to read the whole thing, but it seems like you've got a lot of good stuff in it.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Earl. You know, I had found a great co-writer, Tim Brown, who writes for Yahoo. He covers Major League Baseball for Yahoo. He's covered Major League Baseball for a long time. So he knows the people in the game. He knows the game inside and out. He was able to talk to people and fill in some of the blanks in my memory. So I hope people, I hope people take away the enjoyment of a good baseball story. Yes, there's a lot in there about my life and growing up differently, you know, being born missing with one hand. But Tim, tells the story of the no-hitter and how that came to be and what happened before the game and what happened after it. And it provides a nice fulcrum that the book kind of moves around. So I hope people like that, and I hope people are inspired by it.
Yes, I certainly hope so, too, because it's a very good book. I think I would highly recommend it. I haven't read the whole thing yet, but I want to certainly recommend it because from anything I've read thus far, you've written a very good book, and Tim Brown has helped you write a very good book. And with all the experiences that you had, I think people would appreciate all the experiences that you've went through.
Well, it was interesting, to be honest with you. It wasn't always great. There were great moments. There were tough moments. My career had incredible highs and some real disappointment. And I don't know that sometimes it was always that much fun to go through, but it makes for a good story. That's for sure.
Yeah. Now, how was your college experience for you when you went to the University of Michigan to play baseball?
Well, I'm here in Ann Arbor right now, and I'm having a great time. Just being back, it means a lot to me to have gone to Michigan and played here. It was a dream come true for me. I grew up admiring Rick Leach when I was a kid. He was kind of the hometown Flint Southwestern hero. You remember that? To go there and to play for Michigan, play for Coach Bud Middaugh, and that's really where I found myself. I didn't know what to expect coming out of Flint Central, to be honest with you, baseball-wise. Had a lot of fun, but to compete at the Big Ten level, to play against good college players from around the country, that really gave me a lot of confidence. It gave me the opportunity to play on the USA teams, which gave me more confidence and ultimately, to play professional baseball.
Were there many major leaguers on the Michigan team when you played there?
We had some guys who made it, definitely. Mm-hmm. Scott Kamenicki was a senior when I was there. Barry Larkin would have been a senior had he not gone pro. And Mike Ignashek, a good friend of mine, he made it to the major leagues. Hal Morris made it to the major leagues. Ross Powell, we had some great guys up and down, some really talented players from around not only Michigan, but Ohio and good baseball being played in Ann Arbor back then.
Yeah. Like I mentioned to you, when we first started there, I was just amazed when you went to the majors, straight to the major leagues without having to play in the minors. That had to be so special for you. Like you say, you don't remember much about that first game, but I can't imagine that you were probably so nervous, you probably don't even remember much of that when you got out there on the mound for the first time, and at least going straight to the pros and, not having to go to the minors at all. That had to be a heck of a special feeling.
It was. I mean, it was hard to believe. I think back on that. I was 21.
Yeah.
And I I would have been a senior in college. I was only 4 years out of Flint Central. And to think about that and to think about how fast things happen, it's sort of amazing. And it's hard to believe, you know, you look back on it and you're removed from it several years now. It's hard to believe that it was you.
Yes, you're right, because it's so amazing that you were able to go as far as you did and do all the things that you did. And of course, you were such an inspiration for so many people, especially a lot of little kids. And like you say, you met so many people and so many kids that you helped along the way. And that had to be very inspirational for you, helping all the little kids that you helped.
It was. I mean, baseball was, you know, helped me to find my way, and it helped me to fit in and be a part of a team and be a part of something. And in a lot of ways, I used baseball to try to move past the label of being a one-handed kid or being a one-handed pitcher. And what I discovered when I got to the major leagues is how many people you could inspire by playing, and how many people around the country in every city that we went to. You know, parents came to the games and wanted to talk to me and talk to my mom and talk about my mom and dad and little kids, little boys and girls facing every kind of challenge imaginable, you know, would show up and ask me questions. And, you know, in their eyes, I saw the same things that I felt as a kid. And in a lot of ways that helped me to come to terms with being different and to realize that, we are who we are, and our differences make us special. And at times, we should be thankful for the things, the inspiration and the ambition and the drive that it gives us.
Yes. Now, did you see a lot of the kids that you saw? They all wanted to play a sport. I mean, maybe because of you, maybe not, but they all wanted to do something. Did you help them send them in that direction, because they all have that desire for as kids, you know, we all want to do something. And so I imagine some of the kids that had an impairment, they just didn't know how to do it, but they wanted to do something.
Absolutely. I mean, that was the goal. That was the message, you know, find something you'd love to do. And it doesn't have to be sports. It doesn't have to be baseball, football. Find something you love to do. And when you love something, you practice it. You get better at it, and it gives you that way to move past expectations. And you know, a lot of people describe my play as courageous or motivational or inspirational, and well, it was none of those things. I was doing what I loved to do. It was baseball, and I had great people in Flint who helped me learn to do it. And that's what I try to tell kids and people to this day: find something you love, and you know, we only get one shot at this life. You might as well do what you like to do.
Oh, so true. Hey, Jim, it's a pleasure and an honor talking to a fellow Flintstone. You know, we're both fellows from Flint, and as you know, I think we appreciate a lot of things that we learned that helped us in our careers to get where we were growing up in Flint, Michigan. I always thought we had a lot of special things growing up in Flint, and you know, that didn't happen for everybody, but it certainly happened for you, and this congratulations for you. And the book is called Imperfect, and so you can buy it now. It's available, and I'll tell folks again where they can get copies of that at. And you're signing books, and you're going to be in Flint, what, a little bit later on, or in Okemos later on too, aren't you?
I'll be in Okemos tonight at Schuler's Books, and I'll be in Flint on Saturday at the Flint Public Library. So it'll be a very nice event, and nice to get back home, and I'm looking forward to seeing friends and family.
Okay, Jim, well, I'm going to try to get out the Shooters, that bookstore out in Okemos, and give it a chance to see you tonight and say hello to you. So, hey, good talking with you, Jim, and it's a pleasure having you on the show today.
That'd be great, Earl. I appreciate you having me.
Hey, thank you. Okay, bye-bye. And that's Jim Abbott, the former Michigan pitcher and a former Major League Baseball player at California and the New York Yankees. He's written a book called Imperfect, and you certainly should go out and get it. You'll be at Shuler's tonight out in Okemos, and you go to Win Shuler's and talk with Jim Abbott as well. So it's a very good show today. I want to thank you all for listening. Thank you all for calling. We invite you to come back and join us again tomorrow right here on AM 870. If you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up. Talk sports with us. right here on AM 870 WKAR. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on AM 870. If you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoon right here on Michigan State University Radio, AM 870 WKAR, East Lansing. Have yourself a very safe and a pleasant evening.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.